We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, Hoosier fans? And welcome back to another episode of the House of Hoosier podcast brought to you by the Field of 68 Network. Alongside Ben Haller, I am Austin Platt. Ben, it's been a while since we've done an episode together. It's post-Thanksgiving now. Big Ten plays around the corner. How are we doing, and how was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was fantastic. Ate a lot of food. That's the most important thing, I think. And saw Hoosier bounce back one day after a tough loss to UConn, a very good team. But overall, great Thanksgiving. And it's a shame we haven't had one in a while because there is a lot of action coming up.
Absolutely. It's kind of a different age now without the Indiana wasn't in the Gavitt games this year with the Big East. Obviously, the Big Ten ACC no longer exists. So kind of having this Thanksgiving be a bit different. And obviously, now looking ahead to December and Big Ten play without kind of another marquee game yet is kind of surprising. But here we are, Indiana 5-1 to this point, 3-0 at home. Obviously, we'll recap really the last three games in the Empire Classic. Indiana obviously splitting, losing to UConn by 20, and then bouncing back with a tough win against the Louisville team that looked pretty inspired in the Empire Classic, and then beating a Harvard, not a bad team, out of the Ivy on Sunday at the Gainbridge Fieldhouse. It is now to advance to 5-1. Ben, we haven't really talked yet about the team this year, but a lot of the games have been closer than expected. Obviously, those first three non-conference games against Florida Gulf Coast, Army in particular, and a little bit against Wright State, a lot closer than expected. But it seems like as of late, Indiana, I don't want to say turning the corner, but showing more signs of a team that's definitely improving as the season goes on.
Well, you're exactly right. I don't think we've seen that one moment or one thing that tells us they've turned the corner yet, but I think the improvement's big, and I think that's something you're just going to see a lot with such a new team. So many new guys coming in. Trey Galloway, a lot of experience. Xavier Johnson, a lot of experience. But keep in mind with Johnson, I mean, last season didn't play over half the year, so he's going to still need a little bit of time to get kind of acclimated and get back to that Division I college basketball. Pace is one of the biggest things for him coming off of the injury. And I think it's interesting for Xavier Johnson right now. Not only I think Indiana fans are upset that he hasn't really shown the scoring ability that we know he has in the first few games. I think also the playmaking ability hasn't been what we know Xavier Johnson's to be. The assists, less than three assists per game. He is expected to lead the team in assists. And it's not just assists. That's not the only telling part of playmaking, but it's an Indiana team that spacing is a little weird right now because you don't have a lot of shooters and you have three playmakers when you talk about Johnson, Galloway, and Mbako in the starting lineup behind your two bigs. And I think Johnson right now, because he doesn't have as much shooting ability as someone like a Miller Cop last year, is kind of in a weird, awkward role right now. And if he can't be that point guard, getting those assists and being a really good passer, then he's not living up to his full potential. I think that's what a lot of Indiana fans are worried about. One of the first things they're worried about right now with this Indiana team is just Xavier Johnson's how he has affected the scoring for Indiana so far.
I think the fouls is one of the biggest things that you think about. If you kind of look at the UConn game at first, picked up two fouls in the first 2 minutes. It was more or less irrelevant for the rest of the game. Picked up a third as well in the first half and really didn't see that many minutes. And at that point, it felt like 2 minutes into that game against UConn, well, you said, you kind of thought Indiana's chances were relatively dashed because only played 14 minutes, picked up a total of four fouls, had only 4 points, one field goal that he made the entire game. I want to say it was like a driving layup or something like that. So it kind of, him being out of the lineup really changes changed things for Mike Woodson and puts a lot of pressure on the bigs. And Malik Renew has taken a big step. We've seen that. He's been very, very impressive to this point. Khalil Ware is everything and more Indiana could have expected, but they need these guards to play very well because they don't have a ton of shooters. This is a team we've talked about lost so much from last year, particularly beyond the arc. And Trey Galloway, he hasn't shown too much from three-point land. He was 1-for-3 against UConn and 0-for-4 against Louisville the day after. So he's really been struggling from beyond the arc. This is something that I think we really needed to see from Galloway step up from the three-point line. We know defensively he's one of, if not the best on the team, and that's what Mike Woodson kind of harps on night in and night out. But to this point, you need Xavier Johnson to be at the best to his ability, and Indiana kind of has skated by to this point. But now looking into Big Ten play, you think about the game against Kansas, Auburn, it's kind of all the big games are coming quick and fast, and you don't have as many non-conference kind of bye games, at least during the Thanksgiving break, that we've seen in recent years. So not as much time to really figure it out. So you mentioned that that's a big thing, but Indiana, you know, they didn't play very well against UConn, but came back with a motivating win, I think is the way to put it, against Louisville, a team that looked very good in the Empire Classic. A final score 74-66. Indiana trailed in the second half, and the defense, particularly the zone defense, is what made them kind of basically was the difference in them coming away with the victory. Something we didn't see a lot, Ben, last year, even with Mike Woodson's now 3 year, 2+ years as the head coach, but that was a pretty pleasant surprise.
It's funny because you have the Kenny Payne bringing up, you know, he was caught off guard, didn't think Mike Woodson would throw a zone. And, you know, a lot of that is joking. At least that's what his intent was in his press conference. And just because him and Mike Woodson have that history in the NBA. But if I'm a Louisville fan and he's just plain admitting that there was something that they were not ready for. And like you said, there's not a real reason you should expect Indiana to go to zone, but you should at least have somewhat of a plan. And it really seemed like Louisville did not. I think the general consensus on Louisville right now is that they're just not a very well-coached team. And say what you will about Kenny Payne, but it's a team of their starting lineups, 5-star and 4 4-stars. I mean, the talent is there, but they don't have very good decision-making. And they're not a very well-coached team. They needed New Mexico State, who has zero returning staff members after having to put the season on hold last season. And I think one or two returning players. And they needed them to be down to 4 players because 6 players fouled out and their best player was out to beat them in overtime. It's a Louisville team that right now, I think that's all you really need to do to be able to get the upper leg on them is just throw something at him that'll catch him off guard. So I like what Mike Woodson did there a lot. And Louisville's a team that wasn't shooting the ball very well at that moment. So it's a good move. But keep in mind, like I said, Louisville is a talented team. And I said this with Mason and you weren't on, going into the Empire Classic, is that even if Louisville's not one of the better Power 6 teams, it's a Power 6 win. It's a win against a team that's a brand name and has a lot of talent. So I think that helps confidence. And I think they showed it in the Harvard game on Sunday.
And obviously, as an Indiana fan, you're going to root for Louisville to perform well this year in the ACC, and because every win that they get seemingly will help Indiana. I kind of felt that way 2 years ago in IU's biggest non-con win against Notre Dame at Gainbridge. And, you know, little did Indiana know that would turn out to be not a bad win and where they needed it, really, with that NCAA tournament resume kind of hanging in the balance. So a response that Indiana needed, it felt like kind of this was the way that it was going to go. Losing by 20, that UConn team is back where it should be at the top, one of the best teams in the country. Dan Hurley is surely building a powerhouse there, and Donovan Clingan, they held him pretty well. And the fact that Malik Renew really was able to kind of blossom really and show out in a game like this, going up against the second big and Alex Caravan. But in the end, it was the guards, Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer, that Indiana could not stop, and kind of in the second half just didn't have any answers. And it was it kind of showed that without Galloway and Xavier Johnson giving you much, Indiana just didn't have enough shooters and enough points to turn to, even with Renew and Ware faring pretty well against the Huskies in that sense. So but a good rebound for Indiana against Louisville, and it's interesting to see. I said this, I was on the call for that game against UConn. Indiana's scheduled to start this year, I feel like they haven't really gotten themselves kind of the legs underneath them, because you play, what was it, a Tuesday game against Florida Gulf Coast in the first game, and then it was a Friday game against Army?
Sunday.
Sunday. So they had, what, 5 days off there. Wright State was Thursday. So those three games kind of all spread out. And then you quickly get, boom, Sunday, Monday, you're playing in a tournament in New York City. That's pretty big. And then you wait all the way until Sunday, just a few days ago, to play your next game. So kind of I feel like the scheduling has not favored Indiana, where in the past they're playing, you know, three games in, you know, 10 days or so, which is relatively normal. Obviously, with the way the tournaments work and the games that Indiana does not schedule, you know, having to work around that obviously changes things. But I feel like that was something we saw. It could not necessarily help Indiana, I think. That did not favor them, just having to wait so many days and you have time to kind of look at film and almost think about how poorly they've played instead of just getting right back out there and not thinking about it. I think that's what kind of happened against Louisville, kind of the result of just playing within 24 hours and kind of flushing the game immediately beforehand. And we saw that, I guess, a little bit against Harvard potentially on Sunday. Indiana came away with another victory. So at 5-1, they've won all the games they're supposed to. It feels like if the predictions would have said Indiana would be 5-1 at this point, and that's exactly what they are. Not an inspiring game of basketball necessarily, been on Sunday at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, kind of an odd time, the end of Thanksgiving break. But I guess what were your takeaways as the cream and crimson took down the crimson?
I liked Indiana, the fact that they were able to play without Xavier Johnson in that second half. And this is something to keep in mind when I was talking about Xavier Johnson earlier and the guards. The injury plays a lot into Xavier Johnson's struggles so far, I think. So I think that's one of the biggest things right now. And Indiana hadn't showed that without Xavier Johnson, they were able to create a lot offensively until that second half against Harvard, which is really important. It's an Indiana team that's going to play inside out, and they're going to play inside a lot. And they're going to give the ball to their scorers inside, and Khalil Ware and Malik Renu, who are very talented. I think a lot of Indiana fans have been caught off guard by Malik Renu's talent and his touch offensively down low. I think he struggled defensively, but I think he's been consistent option down low. I mean, last season he showed flashes, but this year he's been really consistent. And then Khalil Ware is just one of the most talented bigs Indiana's had. You know, Trace Jackson Davis, obviously, but before or since Trace Jackson Davis, I can't think of another talented big in a while that they've had as talented as Khalil Ware. Just his ability to do a bunch of different things in the post jump, the post fadeaway. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he can still finish pretty strong. And that's something tough to do with his kind of stature. And he's got the 7-foot height that helps it and makes everything so much better. I think Indiana's learning to play how to play around those two bigs, which I think is something that was part of the struggles in the first couple of games. Renu was still getting his, Ware was still getting his, but now they're starting to figure out what works around those two.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's strange to think that Indiana 4-for-15 from 3-point land, and Harvard was a team they chucked up a lot of threes as well. 9-for-26. Malik Mack, kind of the guy who everyone thought, well, how did he end up at Harvard? Because he played incredibly well. 8-for-16, had 27 points in 33 minutes. And this is not a bad Harvard team, which has finished predicted to finish in the middle of the Ivy League, which is crazy to think about. But they've had success in the past in the Ivy. And this is going to be, I think, another decent win for Indiana. I think it's going to be better than expected, considering Harvard had beaten Colgate, a solid team out of the Patriot League, a couple days before. And they came into that game 5-1. So they dropped to 5-2. Indiana improves to 5-1. So definitely not a bad win. I think something that we have to touch on, Ben, is the three-point shooting and just the overall drastic difference in the number of three-point shots Indiana's taking versus the amount of points they've scored in the paint. And it's more than it was last year and the years prior with Race Thompson, Trace Jackson Davis. Those guys would get, you know, 40 points in the paint between just the two of them. It felt like night in and night out. This year, it's just so much different. For you, with three-point shooting, are you worried about it? Is it the percentage? Is it the volume? Is it a little bit of both? Or are you just kind of under the assumption that, well, if they kind of dominate everyone down low, they don't have to do very well from three? I'm curious what your opinion is.
Well, Mike, first of all, Mike Woodson has his hands full because it takes a lot of other, you know, tactical and strategy ideas that he's going to have to implement and just try different things out, which is why early in the season, you're not going to be as good as a lot of people would have expected. Now, I think what Indiana has what you need to have when you don't have three-point shooters, and that's the ability to finish down low and finish at a very high clip. Malik Renu and Khalil Ware, both of their field goal percentages above 50% so far this season. The lane's going to be clogged, and it's going to be so much easier to help down low on those two guys when you don't have to worry as much about the guard shooting threes. But I think because those two bigs have that, you know, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little worried. We haven't seen a lot of the teams in the top half of the Big Ten have as little three-point shooting as Indiana does this year. But that's not to say there's no way they don't thrive without that three-point shooting. I think it's just the toughness down low that's going to help them.
Yeah, it's I think you look at previous years, just like the way college basketball has changed, the point where, oh, you have to get X number of threes. You have to – X meaning just a number, not Xavier Johnson. You just got to get a certain number of threes. Pick whatever variable you want to fill it in there. But I don't think it's that much of a concern. If they could dominate down low, they need to get up more threes. And it's the fact that the guys who are getting these threes up are not the guys necessarily you want. Xavier Johnson hasn't shot too many threes this year. Caleb Banks, I think, is 2 for 4 this year. I think you shot both of them against Harvard, but just the percentages and the guys that are shooting them, the volume is what's, I think, really worrying to this point. And the fact where, I mean, you got to get the right guys three-point shots, and CJ Gunn is someone who has really, really struggled from three-point land in his first year plus now here at Indiana, but he's not a guy you expect to be shooting many threes a game. Banks can stretch the floor. I like the way his versatility is as kind of a tall, lanky guy. I think he's improved on both sides of the ball, but Galloway has really struggled from three. And Bacco's not a three-point shooter. He's more of a mid-range guy and someone who I guess is more comparable to someone like a Hood Schifino last year, who we knew would be great from mid-range. I think he was better than a lot of people thought from the three-point line, which I think is probably a reason why he was taken in the draft and scored his first points last night as we're recording this. So for me, I just think that I don't really necessarily care about the three-point numbers. The volume needs to increase. I think the guys who need to shoot the threes need to give it into, you know, the hands of guys who you trust more. I think Xavier Johnson might be your most proven shooter to this point. The fact that he hasn't taken that many threes is worrisome. So it's something they'll figure it out. Mike Woodson has never, obviously, just a three-point shot is something that hasn't helped out Indiana too much. The last several years now, the state's, you know, pre-Woodson and even Archie Miller when he was the head coach. So it's something that they'll figure it out. I am worried about the guys who are taking the three-point shots instead of looking down low, because either, you know, Renu, Ware, or, you know, maybe Mbaka, they should be getting a touch if you can on every single possession, because if the offense can run through them, then I think that makes it that much better. You mentioned it, inside out. So looking at these six games now, this is kind of the main part of the non-conference is already over. It's crazy how much time flies. We're still in the month of November. What do you evaluate Indiana as a whole? 5-1 kind of feels like the right record here, but is it, you know, concerning? Or are you confident? Kind of where are you on the, I don't want to say panic meter, but kind of where's your fandom kind of lying right now?
Well, first of all, I kind of want to respond to the first thing you said, and I'm not upset right now. I like the number where it is, where the three-point shooting or three-point attempts have been. That's where I disagree with you a little bit. I don't think they need a ton more. And it's easy to look at the three-point percentage and say, oh, that's why. Well, they don't have a three-point percentage, a good three-point percentage, so why should they shoot more? But I think if you watch the games and see some of the passes that some of the guards are making and decision-making the guards have out of those three-point shots, some of those question mark decisions where, like, maybe they could shoot that. I think generally they're making good decisions. And that's what I've liked about this Indiana team so far, is for such a young team and such a new team, I think they've made pretty good decisions so far. Not a ton of turnovers. They've had a game or two where they've had a decent amount. But overall, I think that's improving. So I don't think that three-point attempts need to go up. But I do agree in the sense that maybe they should shift hands a little bit. I'd really like to see CJ Gunn get the hot hand. You're talking to me about where I stand right now, and it's just hard to tell. You had the, you know, once again, we talked about this, Indiana football earlier this season, where you're playing two ends of the spectrum. You're playing Ohio State the first game, and top five team in the country in Indiana State, who's an FCS team. That's kind of what it's felt like. Other than Harvard and Louisville, maybe there haven't been a ton of middle of the road tests. You know, UConn's a top five team in the country, and then FGCU's kind of had somewhat of a slower start. Army's not very good. So I think it's kind of hard to tell where they are right now. That's why I'm excited for Friday. A really good test against the Maryland team who hasn't played up to expectations. But how can Indiana handle Maryland on the defensive side of the ball? How can they take away the three-point shooting? And how can they guard some of the guards that are quick? And that's something that it's going to be very telling, is how the defense, who's played pretty well so far up to this point in the season, how they can play against an opponent like Maryland.
I can't wrap my head around the fact that Big Ten play is already here. It feels like the last few years you've gotten more than six games to kind of see where the team is. You get a feel over Thanksgiving, kind of how the guys are playing. But another, you know, basically the entire week off, Sunday, you play a game in Indy and you come down and now you prepare for your biggest game of the year against Maryland. And this is a stretch where it's go time now, basically. You kind of had this odd stretch, you know, days off, not, you know, quick turnarounds, et cetera, et cetera. But you haven't had a real, you know, two games a week kind of in, you know, once every 3-4 days. And that's what Indiana gets. Now you look at Friday, Maryland, it's Tuesday against Michigan. I want to say you travel to Ann Arbor. It's a Michigan team that's kind of all over the place right now. And then you get Auburn in Atlanta, and then Kansas comes to town. So it's kind of these next four games, I think, will tell you a lot about this Indiana team. And it's kind of these two games the last 2 years, and just it stinks. I personally hate how they play Big Ten games now. It's too early. I mean, I get it, the students are in school and whatnot, but it's just silly. I mean, wait till after the new year. Maybe it'll change with all the new conferences changing, and maybe it'll be a change next year. But you think about it, last year, the four games that Indiana had from this stretch, well, actually, it was more than that. It was UNC, and obviously that huge win in that ACC challenge, and they played Rutgers Big Ten opener. They laid an egg. They came back. They beat Nebraska, which is like a, you know, every year now that Indiana just plays Nebraska in December. That's not happening this year, thankfully. And then you had it was Arizona and Vegas. They fell, and then they got blown out by Kansas a week later. So in that stretch, they were 2-3 in those five games, something like that. So just kind of, and it kind of looked and see, oh, okay, well, this is where the team has really struggled, because they hadn't lost a game to that point. And now here we are kind of sitting at the same spot, 5-1. And this is a huge test kind of in the stretch, these next four games. How does Indiana fare? What can they do? And obviously it all leads up to that Kansas game, which is, you know, arguably the biggest game on the schedule of the entire year, conference or non-conference. You mentioned Maryland has struggled. Obviously they beat Indiana last in the regular season relatively handily. Jameer Young, they have a great, you know, two guard set that they have, and they're, you know, a solid 3-point team. They have not looked very good this year, but you know, it really has the rest of the conference looked all that good. I know Nebraska has surprised, but Michigan State's got three losses. A lot of teams been playing very close games. I know Kansas, like right now, is like was in a heated battle with Eastern Illinois. Illinois has looked, you know, decent, not great in a few games, kind of all over the place right now. And kind of how do you try and balance, I guess, the struggles or so in the non-conference, or teams just not looking that great, and try and compare that to, oh, here we are, it's conference play. And I guess, where do you weigh, how much do you weigh the non-conference games into how much you give Indiana a shot on Friday on their home court?
Well, it's funny because it just seems like every year we're seeing more and more teams struggle with those bye games, those, you know, mid-major opponents. And it's not good. And it doesn't help things that these conference games are coming even earlier, because these teams haven't necessarily figured out a lot. But it just means everybody's on a more equal playing field. And Indiana and Maryland have gone through somewhat of the same things. Maryland has dropped a few games. They're off to a rough start. But, like I said, it's just equaling the playing field, I think, for a Maryland team who is starting to look more together in their last few games. Their first few games just looked like they had five basketball players that never met each other on the basketball court. They turned the ball over a lot. They had guard play, was expected to do a ton in the beginning of this year, and Jameer Young hasn't really lived up to that for the first six or seven games. But I think they're coming more together recently, and they've had some big wins over those mid-major opponents. And I think they're a team that, coming into the year, people expected them to be pretty good, a lot because of their top of the roster. I mean, you look at Jameer Young, you look at Julian Reese, but they're not a very deep team. And when you talk about depth, there's a couple things you could talk about just in terms of they have a lot of guys that'll get minutes, but that's because some of the lower guys that do get minutes probably shouldn't be getting minutes on a Big Ten team. And you got Jordan Geronimo, who Indiana fans know very well, has been in the starting five for the last couple of games. I mean, they're a team that outside of their top three or four guys doesn't have a ton of options. And that's something they haven't been able to find through those first seven games. That's usually what you're able to tell in those mid-major games or who's going to step up and be your rotation. I think it's solidified a little bit more Indiana than we've seen in Maryland so far.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Strange to think that Maryland, a team 4-3, they've won all four of their games on their home court. They just tonight blew out Rider, scored over 100 points and probably the best game they've played all season. And some weird losses in there. They were playing in the tournament and lost both those games in the Asheville Championship, two games in 72 hours or so. They did not fare very well there and lost to Villanova as well, another strong Big East team on the road. So at least they have, you know, that kind of true non-conference road game, which Indiana does not have again this year. Actually, it's the first time I think in a while. They have one last year, a non-conference true road game.
Yeah, Kansas.
Duh.
Yeah. 2 years ago, they did not.
Syracuse.
Or Syracuse, yeah, you're right, Syracuse.
So both, but both
it's
times.
Been zero, it's been pretty much one for the last few years that I can remember.
And last year was Xavier as well. So that's two. So at least you got to see something last year, but we don't get that this year for Indiana. And I could, you know, if this team is kind of around the bubble where people project them, then, you know, obviously the non-conference schedule means a lot in Indiana, at least for now, it isn't going to show the committee a ton based on these games. Obviously, it depends on how these other mid-major teams fare. But I guess now at Big Ten, kind of we talked about this, kind of where do we try and place all these teams? Let's do a little tier list together. 14 teams, everyone, you know, no one's played a conference game yet. I want to say the Indiana-Maryland game is the first conference game. I think that there's only one or two that Friday night. I want to say I think Purdue and Northwestern also play Friday night.
Purdue Northwestern's the 9 and Indiana Maryland's the 7, and those are the two Big Ten Network games.
That's fun. Obviously, Northwestern beat Purdue last year on I want to say it's Super Bowl Sunday that upset happened, and that was one of their biggest wins in their program history for Northwestern. Crazy to think that that was the case. And obviously, I think they beat Indiana in the next game or something like that. But if we try and cluster all 14 teams here together into tier lists, if we start with tier one, kind of the favorites. For me, I think it's still Purdue and Michigan State. We could put Purdue in its own kind of category here, but I think Purdue and Michigan, maybe not 1 and 1A anymore. Maybe it's a more clear 1 and 2. But, you know, kind of that first game of the year, you never know what's going to happen. Indiana almost lost to Florida Gulf Coast. Michigan State lost at home to James Madison in a crazy game. And since then, they lost to Duke in the Champions Classic. Duke's a national championship contender again. And then Arizona, team that's looked very, very good at the start of this season. They also beat Duke. We're at this point, where do you kind of rate these Big Ten teams?
You know, I'd hate to overreact, I think, to the first couple games, especially for Michigan State, the first game of the year. But I would personally put Purdue and Michigan State in different categories. And maybe it's not as much a knock on Michigan State. I think Purdue's looked better than a lot of people expected still. I mean, it can't go unnoticed. Anyway, everybody loves to say how they feel about Zach Edey and it being easy for being 7-4. He put up three straight 20-point games in the Maui games. He's a 7-4 center and did that on three straight days, back-to-back-to-back days. Big guys aren't supposed to be able to do that. And that's just something for Purdue. I think, you know, Zach Edey's a given, but I think Braden Smith and some other guards and Lance Jones been a big addition. I think Purdue truly is the best team in the country. I know a lot of Indiana fans don't like hearing that, but I think they're in a different tier than Michigan State.
I see nothing wrong with that. Maui Invitational was pretty exciting to watch, and it's nice to see that we have basketball on kind of at all times of the day based on Hawaii being 5 hours behind us, which makes it for some nice evening basketball and allows us to stay up much later with a good excuse to watch some hoops. So if we're putting Purdue in tier one, then I guess in tier two, it's Michigan State, I would imagine. And then, you know, you stick Illinois in there. Kind of looking at the way the preseason predictions went, Illinois feels like they're kind of the next best team. Nebraska's a team that's 7-0. Fred Hoiberg having one of the best seasons. They play Creighton coming up this week in one of the biggest games maybe in his coaching career. Are we saying Michigan State, Illinois in tier two? Are we adding anyone? I don't think Indiana's quite there yet. Kind of where do you have kind of below Purdue?
Yeah, I think Michigan State actually, I think Michigan State's closer to Illinois right now than they are to Purdue. Once again, not to overreact to the first couple games for Michigan State. They'll be okay. I never bought them as a top five team in the country, and I know a lot of Big Ten watchers truly believe that, but the guard play, and keep in mind, obviously great in March Madness. You need good guard play in March Madness, and that's why they perform so well. But it wasn't as consistent in the regular season as a lot of people seemed to made it out to be. A.J. Hogard got off to somewhat of a rough start in Big Ten play last season. So I think that consistency for Michigan State might come up and bite them early in the Big Ten season again. But I think it's just those two in tier two. Maybe I put the next 11 teams in the third tier, though. I don't know if I can differentiate much between what's happened so far in those. But, no, it does get tough after that Illinois-Michigan State. Teams that have stood out to me, Nebraska going 7-0. I haven't played a non-bye game yet, I think. I'm not sure where that Oregon State game was. I don't know if that was part of some kind of challenge or something like that, or if that was just a home and home. But other than Oregon State, they haven't really played a true test. And Oregon State's one of the worst Power 6 teams that you're going to find. But coming into the year, I thought Nebraska could be better than people expected. They just return a lot of talent, and which is the same way I kind of feel about Northwestern as another team with Boo Booey. You know, guard play has been somewhat of a – it came at a premium in the Big Ten, I feel like, in the last couple of years. And I think with Northwestern, they kind of stand out in that area. And then Indiana, I think, is towards the top in that factor. They're a top half team in the Big Ten. I think top six, top seven. So I think I look at Northwestern. I look at Indiana. You know, Wisconsin has looked solid this year. Other than that, I don't think I put Michigan in there. I don't put Maryland in there. Penn State's the bottom of the barrel. Minnesota, along with Penn State's the bottom of the barrel. Rutgers hasn't looked great this year. So I think you put in Northwestern, you put in Indiana, you put in Wisconsin, and then Nebraska, although they're 7-0, probably doesn't reach that tier.
Yeah, it's kind of wild to think, even with the Big Ten, we figured it would probably be a down year for the conference. Again, it was kind of a lot. Last year even, you kind of figured that, well, I mean, Purdue wasn't even the favorite. Indiana was the favorite last year. And that was kind of, well, we had no idea what would happen last year because of the turnover and just the fact that it felt like nobody returned in the Big Ten last year. This year, obviously a bit different. Obviously, look at the top, Zach Edey, the National Player of the Year, returning, such a rarity. But now in college basketball, second year in a row that's happened, which I think is great for the sport, and even in other guys coming back as well, maybe unexpected. But even like this, the Big Ten, not with a great start, but kind of looking ahead, things, you know, pick up pretty quickly. I think every team gets one or two games kind of in this short little window for conference play, kind of are able to get off to a good start. And who knows where that takes you, because last 2 years, it's been 1-1 for Indiana in the Big Ten. Last year, they lost to Rutgers on the road and came back with one against Nebraska. The year before, beat Nebraska, lost to Wisconsin, then on the road in that game, they really should have won. I guess if we're going to do predictions here, I think we said on the preseason show that Indiana will be 10-10 this year in the Big Ten. Quickly, do we think that's fair? I personally, I could see Indiana finishing 10-10. I don't think that prediction is quite going to tick off anybody quite yet, considering we're Indiana definitely behind the eight ball a little bit in terms of where they started their year.
I bump it up to 11-9, maybe the 12-8 mark right now, just because not only the Big Ten has, you know, not looked as great as we would have expected, Indiana also plays a little bit of an easier conference schedule this year. And you look at the teams that they played twice, a lot of those teams in the bottom half, and a lot of those teams are the teams that we talked about haven't looked great so far. So I think with that scheduling and with the way things have looked and Indiana kind of getting their feet under them against Harvard, I do like Indiana to go, let's say 12-8 right now. I'll upgrade my prediction.
Yeah, I'll bump it up to 11-9. I think that's a big difference, just the fact that I mentioned this before. I don't know if I said on the show. This team reminds me of a lot of the one from 2 years ago. Mike Woodson's first year, a lot of transfers, a lot of question marks coming in, a lot of potential. We figured, I mean, beginning of the year, you know, we saw some crazy predictions of people saying it's a Final Four, you know, Dark Horse Final Four team and stuff like that. But I just think there's so many question marks, a lot of new faces, but a very similar schedule, I think, is why this team can be very comparable. I don't think there are enough shooters on this team. I think that the same, and maybe was the case 2 years ago, although Parker Stewart had a pretty good year and Miller Kopp wasn't half bad in his first year at Indiana either. It was just the volume, I think, that was kind of the biggest question mark, relying so much on Trace Jackson Davis, even, you know, 2 years ago. And when he wasn't, you know, as good and struggled much more in conference play, made a big difference. So I think they finished 9-11 that year. Yeah, I think if we flip it around and say 11-9, I think that's kind of more accurate where this team is. So kind of, you know, 10-10 was, you know, we can stick with that. But if we want to, you know, after six games, move the needle just a little bit. I guess if we quickly, you know, predict these next two games, you get Maryland and then Michigan as well. You go to Ann Arbor. Michigan kind of been all over the place as well. How do you see Indiana fare? And I guess, would you be disappointed if they drop one? Is there a chance they drop two? I wouldn't be surprised if Indiana goes either of the three possibilities, 0-2, 1-1, or 2-0. Not sure about you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just a lot of unknowns right now, not only from Indiana, but from the other two teams as well. I would be disappointed if they dropped Friday. It's a Maryland team that not only has struggled, you're playing at home. There's going to be a ton of energy. You know, it's that awkward time between breaks for students, so they don't have a ton to do. That game will be rocking. It's the first Big Ten game. I think with that kind of atmosphere in a season like this, when you have so many teams bundled together and Maryland could be one of those teams, I think you absolutely should win that game. I'm not disappointed if you drop at Michigan, though. It's your first real road test of the season. Those can always be tough for new players in a new team. And Michigan has showed some promise. So I actually, if my prediction right now is to go 1-1 of the next two, and I think it's a win Friday against Maryland, and they'll drop a close one at Michigan on Tuesday.
Yeah, I'll agree. I kind of see it right in the middle. At first, I kind of thought Maryland might be coming into this year the tougher team, and maybe you can steal one against Michigan like how you did last year. But I'll say 1-1 as well, and, you know, get a little bit of momentum and just start off kind of at 500, and kind of all the students can pack into Assembly Hall, let's hope, and get all kind of the nerves out. This is a kind of a stressful two and a half weeks for everybody coming back from Thanksgiving, and you come back on one of the craziest travel days of the year, and then boom, it's one of the hardest, you know, some of the hardest 2 weeks, especially, you know, for the freshmen. I mean, hey, it's your first time with college finals, so hopefully everyone can kind of relieve some stress by going to watch what we hope to be an Indiana basketball victory on Friday night. Ben, any final thoughts before we depart here?
Not that on the top of my head. I think this is going to be an exciting stretch for Indiana right now. This is an exciting stretch for us too. Hopefully some more collaborations, more interviews coming up. I know there are teams of the Big Ten and Kansas coming up that have a Field of 68 podcast like this one. So expect more collaborations there and a fun stretch for Indiana coming up.
Absolutely. So for Ben Holler, I'm Austin Platt. Make sure to follow us on the House of Hoosier podcast on the Spotify and at @House_Hoosier on Twitter or X for all of our updates. But for Ben Holler, I'm Austin Platt, saying so long on the House of Hoosier podcast. We will see you next time.